Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.
Welcome to Love and Inspiration with your host, Roy Cotton Jr. on Bashani Radio. Over 35,000 health professionals and lovers registered for the Lifestyle Medicine Summit on October 27th to the 31st to hear over 50 of the world's top experts in treating root causes like Dean Ornish, Ocean Robbins, Bruce Lipton, Dr. Nicole Francis Cotton, Dr. Arlene Rose, and more. The reviews and feedback were astonishing and show how much we desire a healthcare system based on lifestyle medicine and health coaching. If you would like to register for the free replays on November 13 and 14 of all the talks from the 5-day Lifestyle Medicine Summit, go now to www.victoriouslivingfoundation.com. That is www.victoriouslivingfoundation.com and register on the help page. Today on the show, you will hear from one of the speakers of the Caribbean stage at the Lifestyle Medicine Summit. I'm talking about Billy Sterling Lewis, a counseling psychologist, certified life coach, author, and founder of Impact Counseling and Consultancy, host annual Women's Healing and Empowerment Seminar in Trinidad and Tobago. Billy Sterling Lewis will be speaking about addressing negative rumination, about mental health stigma, discrimination, and shame on Love and Inspiration today. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Lifestyle Medicine Summit, the Caribbean stage, broadcasting from out of beautiful St. Martin in the Caribbean. And we are really happy to have you with us here, wherever you are coming in on this live broadcast. And we're so pleased to have the next speaker join us. I'm super excited, as you can tell, that we're going to be joined by Billy Sterling Lewis, straight out of beautiful Tobago by ways of Antigua. And Billy Sterling Lewis is a counseling psychologist, certified life coach, author, and founder of the Impact Counseling Consultancy. She has worked extensively over the years with substance misusers, persons dealing with mood disorders, and victims of gender-based violence. She is the host of the annual Women's Healing and Empowerment Seminar in Trinidad and Tobago. And today, you're going to hear from her as she focuses on or addressing negative rumination about mental health, stigma, discrimination, and shame. Welcome to the Caribbean stage of the Lifestyle Medicine Summit, Mrs. Billy Sterling Lewis.
Thank you so much, and good day to you guys, you and Dr. Nicole, Roy, and to all those who are watching in the Caribbean, of course, those of you who are watching online around the world. It's really, really good to be here today. I just want to go straight into the presentation. I do have a few slides, but until that time, I will go ahead. But as the topic was shared, I will be talking about addressing those thoughts, those overly expressive thoughts that we have about mental health and how that leads to stigma and discrimination and how that ultimately affects our population, those who are living with mental illness. Do I have the capacity to share? I do. Great. So I just put everything on my slide here to make it easier for those who are watching. And so, as was said, I'll be looking at the negative ruminations in terms of mental illness. All right. So let's just look at this. These are a few pictures of me. Don't worry, I'm just going to tell you a story because there's a backstory to most of the persons who live with some sort of mental illness. So that's just me in my different stages. I was much younger then. And many years ago, when I was doing my master's degree, preparing to go into counseling as a master's level psychologist, I fell really ill, getting close to the end of my studies. And I eventually called home and said, you know what, I'm going to die. So I'm coming home. I had gone to the clinic on campus and the doctor had said to me, you know, you need to eat more red meat because your blood count is low. And looking at me there, I mean, I love sports. I love to be fit and healthy and fabulous. So red meat was not a part of the plan that I had for my health and wellness. And so eventually when I realized I couldn't keep up with the red meat too often in the week, I just decided, let me go home. And then going home, I actually went to a doctor on my first day back, you would not believe it. And, you know, he looked at me, he said, you know, let's do a stress test. Now, this is the first time I've ever had that done with any doctor. And I've gone to a few over the years. So we did the EKG, we did a lot of other tests and scans. Most things were well, but my stress test score was really, really high. Now, I had gone home thinking, okay, I'm probably going to die because I have a tumor growing in my brain. And after all the assessments with the doctor, he just said to me, you know, your diagnosis is depression with vertigo. And of course, I would have been shocked. Now, I was disappointed, but still relieved because at least it wasn't a brain tumor. But disappointed because I felt so ashamed. And I actually said to the doctor, when he started to prescribe my antidepressants, I said to him, do you know who I am? And of course, I'm not anybody of any notorious, you know, worth or notoriety in Antigua back then. But I said to him, I'm finishing up my studies in psychology. I'm about to help people with these kind of issues. And I asked him, how is it going to look if I have to be on antidepressants and tell people or help people with their mental health issues? And he helped me understand that there was no shame in being on antidepressants. There was no shame in needing help, even though I was a helper. And while I heard the message, it didn't take long for me to step back into the role of me helping them. And that was the first time, now looking back, that I think I really started to walk in this issue of, or this thing of stigma where mental illness is concerned. And that was stigma against myself. And what that does is that it makes it difficult for persons to actually get help. And so I did most of my presentation and preparation from some work from CAFRA and Dr. Professor Rich Hutchison from UWE. And I love this book, and I want to share this with us because this is where I want us to get as we address this issue of stigma, because stigma affects the wellness of those who live with mental illness. Mental illness defines all of us. It is an inevitable consequence of life. So we don't get to escape mental illness because we are the professionals or because we have a lot of money or because we live in a particular place. It defines all of us. And then the greatest enemy lies within ourselves because we try to be right. We want to be better than others and we want to control. And that's where I was over 10 years ago when I was in the doctor's office. I wanted to be the one to help. So I couldn't be like them. I wanted to be the one who could be revered as having mental wellness. So I couldn't be like them. And that forced me to ignore pivotal parts of my own life that later, as I moved into wellness, I was able to face and embrace. All right. So I wanted to just take a look at this briefly because I'll be dealing with mental health in the Caribbean. The truth is we do have a situation that is going out of control in the Caribbean. Now, we follow the international statistics, and in the Caribbean, it's not very dissimilar. So 1 in 4, 1 in 3 persons actually will have a mental health illness throughout some part of or some time of their lives. And the issue is that the mental health issues that we're seeing in our population are across every developmental age and stage. So we have a lot more diagnoses taking place in the childhood stages. So we have a lot more childhood disorders being diagnosed. Then in our adolescent and young adult population, of course, our older populations. I think in the last 10 or so years, we have seen just the proliferation of the Alzheimer's and other neurological disorders in our older populations. And so in the Caribbean, we do struggle. And some of the most popular ones that we see are the mood disorders, which is a psychotic disorders, and key among this is the schizophrenia. We see a lot of the substance use disorders, and this one is so much linked to our culture. And then, of course, we talked about dementia, but then suicide. Suicide is another major issue that we see coming up as an issue in of itself, but primarily resulting from some of the other issues. And so right now, even in this environment that we are in, we are seeing a whole lot more of these situations coming up. And so what this does, like I was faced with that position many years ago, it puts many persons into a place where they are struggling with stigma and discrimination. And so what's the difference? They're basically, you know, different sides of the same coin. Stigma generally is the tagline, the label that we have of these persons who live with these mental health issues. And discrimination is really how we treat them. And so what happens is that we have an idea about persons who may say or be diagnosed, say they have a mental issue. And then because of what we think we know about them and these mental health issues, we treat them a particular way. And the key thing to understand, like I showed in my story, which is the truth, stigma and discrimination is also present among our medical professionals. We have stigma and discrimination among our mental health professionals and also our community and spiritual leaders in a community that is very much linked to spirituality and religion. I often hear people in the religious society dubbing everything as a demon and saying that this person has some sort of witchcraft attached to their life. And maybe it's true, but many times it really is a mental health condition that has come from so many other issues like trauma and just poor well-being that is manifesting in their lives. And so the trouble with that, when we have these people like myself having stigma that they don't address, they often do not get the help they need. Think about it. Whenever somebody's facing a personal crisis, it is the doctor, it is the pastor, it is the community leader, somebody that is has a position of authority in their community that they first run to. And so stigma and discrimination keeps them trapped when those that they run to actually have negative thoughts, ideas, and beliefs about them, and then treat them differently to other people that they know and live among. So where did this come from generally? Let's put it in the Caribbean context. A lot of our issues in the Caribbean where mental health and illness is concerned, and also stigma, comes from our history. Our history as persons of descendants of slaves, our history as persons who are highly spiritual. And so many of the cultural norms often associate mental illness, like I said, with spiritual desecration of personal failing. They talk about moral weakness. This is a big one that we see in the substance use area. But often there is that issue of the supernatural intervention of forces as well. And so, for instance, in the church, people may say that you're not believing God enough or you don't pray enough, and that's why you are where you are. When the truth is, what these labels or the ideologies or ideas do is they keep people from reporting or seeking help. And of course, it keeps them from getting the treatment that they need. And although I'm not talking about this now, one of the other things we have to recognize is that it also keeps us in the field, who work in the field, from being able to properly monitor our trends, our stats in the field. So many times we cannot find, you know, accurate statistics about mental health in the Caribbean past our larger Caribbean islands, especially in the English-speaking Caribbean. So you'll find stats from Jamaica, you may find stats from Barbados and Trinidad and Tobago, but a lot of our OACS countries don't have much. You may have one or two, but many times we don't have enough to help us have a baseline as to what we're dealing with. So let's look at the stigma. I don't know if you've ever thought about this, if you're seeing the screen, but like I experienced with my story that I shared in the beginning, there are different types of stigma. And this is why the issue of stigma is so pervasive and so destructive. We have the personal stigma. So we have a lot of persons who have their own negative ideas and beliefs about themselves and the issues and the conditions that they have been diagnosed with mentally, emotionally. And that sometimes is where the shame comes from as well. And it's so silent sometimes, because if they know and they don't say anything, then at least somebody else doesn't know, but they can't hide from themselves. And then we have the public, or I call it the other stigma. And that is where we have that negative attitude or discriminatory actions against the person who has the mental illness that comes from those around them, in and around their lives. And it could be family members, it could be community members, it could be work colleagues. I often have that question posed to me, you know, if somebody has a mental issue, should they tell their boss? Because they're often so afraid if they tell their supervisor or their boss that they're not going to be able to keep their job. And I've seen instances where that has happened. And then we have the institutional stigma. So this is how big this issue is. We have a lot of policies in the Caribbean which does not properly cater to the mentally ill. Like I said, in the OECS, a lot of our mental health policies are still a bit archaic, and they do not really give the persons who need the help the political or the policy backing. That's what I need to say, not political. Policy backing is politics. Politics is in Tobago. Policy backing that they need to get the right help and intervention to deal with their mental health issues. And so many times, whether intentionally or not, these people are debarred from what could actually be provided for them to help them live a normal, functioning life. And then we have the courtesy stigma. Some persons don't often think about this one, but by proxy. So this stigma is the one that's transferred from somebody else who's already stigmatized to those who are connected to them. So think about it. If you have a family member in your home or just in your family line who has mental illness and is already being stigmatized and already being discriminated against, many times they will say that to the non-diagnosed person or the person who doesn't have a mental disorder, that, you know, you may be just like them. The interesting thing I've heard so many people say when it comes to personal stigma and the courtesy stigma is that they will say, well, you know, my mother's crazy, so, you know, I'm probably the same. And yes, we use it as a joke sometimes, but it speaks to the level of stigma, because in many ways it's used to allow the person to feel ashamed or to feel left out, isolated, which is what happens eventually. I'll come to that. But it also is used as a threat for other persons that, hey, my way of operating that comes from my genetic or my family line is one that you don't want to mess with. And so we have these types of stigma that exist. And so many times we find persons living in a whirlwind of pain, a whirlwind of shame, a whirlwind of panic. And I'll show that a little later. The stigma creates a cycle when it comes to wellness and well-being that never stops until somebody breaks that cycle of stigma and shame. All right? So where does it come from? You know, I tried to put stigma into a little acronym and I got as far as M, and that's okay because the AI had a thought. Let me just do away with that. But when it comes to stigma, stigma originates many times from fear, and I use S as scared. The population is afraid of mental illness. And I'm not even saying the population is afraid of the mentally ill or the persons who live with mental illness. People are afraid of the very term mental illness, mental disorder. If they have to use the name the psychiatric ward or the mental health unit, people's heart rates begin to go up. People start to hyperventilate because they begin to already feel the pressure of having to be labeled as someone who goes to that place or has that particular condition. And that fear tends to bring about stigma, even on the personal level. And then there's trigger. One of the things about mental illness is when we look at persons who live with mental illness or just the general environment, is that it tends to trigger our own weaknesses in us. It's kind of like grief. You know, grief makes people uncomfortable. When we see people with mental illnesses, we tend to recognize how thin the line is for us between sanity and insanity, or mental health and mental illness. And we tend to become very, very defensive to that, as if we have to protect our mental right not to be called or for I have to be grouped as mentally ill. And then definitely ignorance is a big one. There's a lot of misinformation that exists around outside about mental illness and people who live with mental illnesses. And as I was preparing, I thought about this COVID environment where there's so much in the media where they're correcting misinformation. They're correcting misinformation. If you put a post up, once you put COVID or pandemic, there's a little pop-up that says, ensure that the information you're sharing is verified. And I thought to myself, how many times do we see that happening with mental illness? And so many times we have a lot of inaccurate information being shared around on social media, in our homes, in our conversations, in our schools, in our health centers as well, where mental illness is concerned. And that oftentimes leads to the stigma that we see people experiencing. And I use grandiosity with the G. Grandiosity is something we experience a lot in substance misuse. Even among substance misuse, persons who have substance misuse disorders, there's an element of grandiosity. For instance, alcoholics tend to think that they're in a better place than cocaine addicts because, you know, you have to be crazy to use coke, but alcohol is acceptable. She said, I fell ill with alcohol. And generally in the population, grandiosity becomes something that keeps people in a place of erroneous thought and stigma, and it's transferred to persons in and around their lives. And the marginalization that you see here is that when we see how the other people are treated because of their mental illness or their mental health condition or because they're living with it, many times it causes persons to react to that in a negative way. And that comes out in the form of stigma. So remember that people are scared. Mental illness causes people to feel scared, triggered. There's a lot of ignorance. That's where the stigma comes from. There's a lot of ignorance and feelings of grandiosity that are ill placed, and definitely the impact of marginalization that tends to keep people hidden. And this quote helps to bring some balance to the situation. And I want to just read it, although I know you could see it. There's no country, no society, no culture where people with mental illness have the same societal value as people without mental illness. And that for me is a heartbreaking reality. It's heartbreaking. And what I say with that is that what we do a lot, and I see it a lot in substance misuse and psychotic disorders, people remove the human factor from those who are living with mental illness, and that leaves them to be identified as this hollow shell of a disorder as opposed to a person with life and vibrancy and potential and purpose. And for us to address mental health stigma and discrimination, it's going to be very important that we replace that human factor to those who live with mental illness. All right? And so I like this image as it shows the person experiencing mental illness, mental health stigma, may be able to hide the discrediting attribute from others, but they cannot do so from themselves. And this is where the major root of self-stigma comes in. And the reason why I'm focusing a little bit on the self-stigma is because, like I shared before, our statistics are very low where mental health conditions are concerned in the Caribbean. And one of the main reasons is that people do not come forward when they experience situations or symptoms that may speak to living or experiencing at that time. And I say specifically at that time with a mental condition, health condition, because it doesn't have to be a lifetime situation. And so if people don't come forward, we have a skewed representation of what our numbers really look like. And so they try to hide from others, and sometimes they do it very well, but they cannot ever hide from themselves. And this is the cycle that takes place. And we're coming to what it will look like in wellness. So discrimination and stigma create a negative cycle in the life of persons who live with mental illness. And so once you have a diagnosis or whatever your symptoms are, we have a lot of people self-diagnosing. I don't encourage that. But if you have enough symptoms to make you wonder, go get some help from somebody. And what happens is that when they do get help or they express it to somebody, just in, you know, personal sharing, the level of stigma that they may receive, the level of discrimination that they may experience, tends to push them into a place of reduced wellness. So I want you to understand this. Wellness doesn't mean that you do not have a mental illness, because there are many people who do have mental illnesses who have high levels of wellness. And that's because they're not living under the covers of stigma and discrimination, poor services, and poor support. So wellness, so health and wellness are both affected when stigma and discrimination become a part of the life of a person who's living with a mental illness. And if you go around with the circle, we see I have dis-ease, which is really disease, but there's also a measure of dis-ease. That fear, that shame, that discomfort of wanting to acknowledge and accept all of who you are and fearing that people won't accept you, even those who are set to help you because of the symptoms. I've seen many persons who just say about mentally ill persons who live with mental illness, you know, that doesn't make any sense. We better leave that one alone. So the reduced wellness cycles back into illness and further dis-ease and disease. And so persons living with mental illness often also have a lot of physical illnesses that they do not get to manage well because their mental health state and the treatment they receive do not support it. And what do we have again? Increase in the symptoms. So we go around in this cycle over and over again. Many people have been going around this for years and years, not getting a breakthrough because they are afraid to face and seek help for their mental health conditions. And so what are some of the effects? And I've shared some of them before, but I still want to share it because we are looking at how the simple aspect of seeing somebody a particular way and treating them as less than or an outsider, which is the discriminatory actions, can affect them. So stigma and discrimination isolates. That's one of the first things it does. And in my story that I shared in the beginning, I was already isolating them. There was us versus me. All right. And so it also reduces, like I said just now in the cycle, wellness and well-being. It hurts. It hurts mentally, emotionally, and that reinforces the pain that they already have. And it injures because it does cause physical issues as well. And of course, I mentioned before the feelings of shame, and it prevents them from seeking help. But in addition to that, there's so many studies that have shown that on the physical level, we have issues of hypertension, overall poor health, cancers, breast cancer, obesity. We know substance misuse as well. These are some of the other effects of mental illness. So we're coming to the end, and we ask the question, why? In wellness, we always ask the question, the big why. What's your why? What's your big why? I think when it comes to discrimination and stigma, we have to ask the how, the big how. How are we going to get this done? And I like this how acronym that's used by Father Martin. He's a known priest who has worked in substance misuse recovery and in the 12 steps. And he says, we need honesty, we need openness, and we need willingness. That is how we are going to address mental health stigma and discrimination that will bring a positive outcome. And so this is what the starter says for our addressing. Stigma against mental illness needs to be addressed by the mental health professionals first. People who have mental health problems must feel comfortable and confident about seeking help. They must not feel that the act of getting treatment compromises their personhood. And this is from Professor Hutchison again from UMI. This is where we get it done. We get the start, the other starter. If nothing else is important, and I love Dr. Amen's work, if nothing else is certain, one thing we know for sure is that if we do not erase or at least lower the stigma for these issues, many people will unnecessarily suffer and die without getting the help that they need. And so how do we address it? Proximity. It's time for us to really get close to those who live with mental illness, even if it is yourself. When we get closer, we get to see the humanity in the person and not just the symptoms that you may hear about or experience when they have a break. And then we need information, education. And this information education must be started early. We talk about education in the primary level, even the preschool level. It's very important. I see clients every day in the adult stage who cannot even name a feeling. And so we must use education to inform persons that having a mental, living with a mental illness does not define who you are. And it doesn't mean that you do not have health and well-being if you have a diagnosis. Advocacy. We need a lot of advocacy. And I think this is something that's happening a whole lot more around the region. And I applaud those who are already doing it. But we need a lot more to help persons not feel alone, especially those who don't have the energy or the voice to fight for themselves. Those of us who can, we must fight for them. Language and labeling is a big one because we tend to speak about people living with mental illness as if they are the illness in and of itself. If we can change our language and our labeling, one of the reasons I don't like diagnosing so much, if we can change our language and labeling, we make a good footway in dealing with the stigma and having people come out for help. Then we need to have Caribbean health policy reform. This is important when it comes to mental illness. Our facilities must represent places of health and healing. Many of our facilities still look like old, colonial style, stone houses, and there's nothing much that speaks to wellness and health and renewal. And then recognizing lifestyle medicine as not an alternative, but definitely as the main way to deal with it. So as I wrap up, I just want to say to us that we do have many success stories. And if we're able to share our success stories among the other things that we do, we definitely will be able to stem the issues of stigma and discrimination for those who live with mental illness. Thank you so much. I don't know if you guys will have any questions, but I'm going to stop sharing now. Thank you so much,
Billy. That was a very powerful presentation. Because we only have your time is practically almost up, actually up. I just have one question for those persons who are struggling with anxiety. What do you recommend for someone who's dealing with anxiety in these stressful times?
Yes, so anxiety is one of those things that we see a lot happening now. And I think one of the first things that we should do is actually have somebody help us balance that by just talking to somebody about it, letting somebody know that I'm experiencing these feelings at a particular time, a particular place. And then I really do love the wellness approach because I do that a lot with my clients. And I do from morning to evening, from head to toe. If you can tap into those techniques in terms of setting your intentions for the day, allowing yourself to have meditation and grounding, reminding yourself that, hey, right now, I'm in the now. And what's happening to come that I don't have control over, I can resist. I could surrender that. That's what I often use, surrender, because I love the 12 steps. And then we want to also, I do this a lot, look at what's happening in the stomach. I like to call it the stomach, which is set out already, the second brain. And so many times, some of the foods that we eat, as we've heard throughout this summit, do impact our brain, our emotional brain, and can trigger some of the excess feelings of anxiety. So if you could tap into community, that's what it is, tap into community through sharing, tapping into how you're eating, how you're living, and then definitely allow yourself to move and tap into nature, grounding and meditation and prayer. These things are very powerful in helping persons overcome anxiety issues.
Thank you so much, Billy. And I am sure that our audience, both via the summit as well as via the Love and Inspiration show.
You just heard from Billy Sterling Lewis, a counseling psychologist, certified life coach, author, and founder of Impact Counseling and Consultancy, host of the annual Women's Healing and Empowerment Seminar in Trinidad and Tobago. Billy Sterling Lewis was one of the speakers of the Caribbean stage at the Lifestyle Medicine Summit, which was held on October 27th to the 31st. If you would like to register for the free replays on November 13th and 14th of all the talks from the 5-day Lifestyle Medicine Summit, go now to www.victoriouslivingfoundation.com. That's www.victoriouslivingfoundation.com and register on the help page. This is Leroy Cotton Jr. on Love and Inspiration on Bashani Radio.
Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Stan and Money Making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcasts. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.